I think I've told this story before, but it's worth repeating because it's such an interesting story. And it happened to me when I was in grade school. As many of you know, I was a troubled child. I got into a lot of trouble when I was in grade school, particularly in second grade. So much trouble, in fact, that through all the meetings between the teacher and my parents, they finally decided upon a path, a course of action, which would prevent me from getting trouble in the future. Every day, when I would come home, my second grade teacher would write a note to my parents, to which I would go home and I would give the note to my mom and dad, and it would show what my behavior was for the day. This, what they thought would be a great way to solve my behavior problems, and quite honestly, it did. For a long time, I had a lot of fear that when I handed the note to my parents, if it said anything bad, that they would make me feel the pain. So this went on for some time until one day, I couldn't help it, I got into trouble, and Mrs. Bunch, I remember her, looking over her glasses at me and shaking her head and writing the note to my parents. To which I put the note trembling in my pants and started the walk home. And I'm thinking, Lord, today is the day that I shall die. And that's okay. I've had a good life. And as I walked home, I came across a standpipe. Now, in Phoenix, everything is flood irrigation, and they have these standpipes. This one had ivy growing on it. And I looked at the standpipe, and I felt the note in my pocket, and I said, wait a minute. I don't have to die today. And I reached in, and I put the note in the standpipe, in the ivy, and I walked home. And my mother said, where's your note today? And I said, ugh. She forgot. I'm so sorry. Maybe I'll ask her tomorrow and she'll do it. Okay. And I got away with it. And I was so excited. But it was terrible. So the next time this happened and she wrote a bad note, I did the same thing. And this went on for 2 or 3 months until finally there must have been about 20 or 30 notes in the standpipe. Because I was just descending deeper and deeper into the abyss. One day, it was an irrigation day, and you don't choose when your irrigation is. It happens 24 hours around the clock, and when it's your time, you have to turn the standpipe to your irrigation. And my brother's job was to go turn the standpipe, and he goes to the standpipe, and he realizes there's a white piece of paper. He says, well, that's strange. So he picks it up, and he reads it, and his heart starts going like this. This is my older brother, and he finds more. He finds 20 or 30 pieces of paper, and he's so excited. He can't wait to get home and tell mom. So he goes home and tells my mom, and my mother becomes absolutely furious. I have never seen anybody get as absolutely furious as my mother. I get home from school that day. It was a Friday. I still remember it, and she was as angry as I've ever seen her. It was amazing, the amount of anger that she had. And she could get pretty angry. Now, here's the deal. That Friday was also the first day of hunting season. And my father had planned to take me and my brothers to go hunting. Now, the question that came before my parents at that day was, do we let David go hunting? Because obviously he's been a bad boy, and he needs to be punished, and yet, do we want to punish the rest of the family and allow him to go? It was a big question. And they sat there and they pondered it for a long time. Because quite honestly, isn't that the truth? There's always needs to be a punishment for sin. Whenever you violate the rules, you need to be punished so that you know that you violated the rules. You need to repent of that. Something has to be extracted out of your hide or your legs or something to make sure that the punishment has been extracted. There's always some sort of punishment, except in the story of the prodigal son. Have you thought about this? Now, this is our third or fourth week on the prodigal son, and we know that the prodigal son asked his father for his inheritance. And he gets the inheritance, and he goes and he squanders it on everything. Something that may have taken the family for generations to build up, he takes in one fell swoop, goes off to a foreign country, and loses it all in Vegas. And what happens in Vegas stayed in Vegas. Didn't come back with him. He comes back to the father, and as he's running up to the house, what does the father do? The father immediately goes out to him, puts on the ring, puts on the coat, kills the fattened calf, and has a banquet, a feast for him. And commentators for years have said, wait a minute. You know your whole idea of Christian atonement? It's stupid. Just look at the prodigal son. There's no atonement whatsoever, is there? He comes from the foreign land. He doesn't have to work in his father's farm. He doesn't have to work his way up. He doesn't have to repent. He doesn't have to ask for forgiveness. He just comes in and the father grants him love and immediately welcomes him to the family without any cost. There is no cost to the younger brother. As a matter of fact, there's no cost, is there, to anybody, except there is a cost. And we did talk about this a couple weeks ago, the law of primogeniture. Remember, when he goes to the father and he says, Father, I want my inheritance, the father does that. He sells everything. It must have been very embarrassing. And he gives the inheritance to the younger brother. But what happens to the remainder? The remainder of that inheritance goes to the older brother. And when the younger brother comes back, whose inheritance is it that the older father, that the father is spending? It's not the younger brother's. And at this point, the father has given everything to the older brother. The inheritance was the older brother's inheritance. The ring, the calf, the feast, the room and board, now that he's back, everything that he is, the younger brother, is now coming out of the older brother. And it was the older brother's responsibility to allow the younger brother to come in at his cost. And yet when the older brother hears about this feast and he thinks about what's happening, he's absolutely furious. He's absolutely furious because it is his cost that is causing the younger brother to come out. It is him that's paying the price for the younger brother's follies. And he doesn't want it. He doesn't want to pay that price. And so he stays outside. The father has to come to him. There's always a price for sin. And in this case, the price would have fallen on the older brother, and yet the older brother did not want to pay the price. You see, that law of primogeniture said that when they divided the estate, a third of it, between two boys, a third of it would go to the younger brother, but a full two-thirds would go to the older brother. And the people that were around Jesus, the Pharisees, knew this. And they knew that the responsibility of the older brother was what? To keep the family together. You see, Jesus is speaking to the Pharisees and the sinners, and they're all around him, and he tells three parables. The parable of the lost coin, the parable of the lost sheep, and the parable of the lost son. But in the first two parables, somebody goes out to find the lost sheep and brings him in. In the parable of the lost coin, somebody goes out and finds the lost coin and rejoices. But in the parable of the lost son, who goes out? Nobody. The son is out, away from the family, away from the feast, away from the family, and it would have been the job of the older brother to go out and find the son, and yet he doesn't do it. And we don't understand that because we don't live in that culture, but if you lived in that culture of the day and you were one of the Pharisees, you would have known that it would have been the older brother that should have gone out and found the son at any cost. There's a story on his sermon on this prodigal son, Edmund Clowney, his sermon, Sharing the Father's Welcome, tells a story about the Vietnam War. During the Vietnam War, Army Lieutenant Daniel Dawson's reconnaissance plane went down over the Viet Cong jungle. When his brother, Donald, heard the report, he sold everything he had and bought passage to Vietnam. And there he equipped himself with soldier's gear and wandered through the guerrilla-controlled jungle looking for his brother. He carried leaflets picturing the plane and describing in Vietnamese the reward for news of the missing pilot. He survived the extreme dangers of the jungle and was even captured by the Viet Cong, but they did not harm him. Out of awe and respect for what he had done, he had become known as the An Toi Phi Cong. the brother of the pilot. That's what an older brother should do. When he sees the lost brother out there wallowing in the pigsty, he's the one that tries to keep the family together, and he's the one that should go. And the brother in the story doesn't do that. But my friends, do you see it yet? We do have an elder brother like that. An elder brother loves us so much, he's not going to go to Vietnam. He's going to come from heaven to come down to earth to find us and to rescue us. And he puts on the robe on us. By his death, the robe was taken off of him so that we could wear the robe. The signet ring, he wore a crown of thorns that we could wear the Father's ring. He puts together the fatted. He takes the cup of wrath so that we may drink the cup of salvation and live with him forever. It is the elder brother Jesus Christ in this story who comes to find his lost elder brother. Of all the lostness in the story, he is the one that is the true elder brother and does what he should do to bring us back into the heavenly kingdom, to feast with the Father. I remember that Friday sitting in the car with my dad, and he made me sit in the right seat. Everyone else was in the back. And he looked at me. He said, "David, the only reason why you're coming with me on this hunting trip is because if I leave you here, she'll kill you." And I don't think that's a good thing. But the fact is that I know that my dad he had to really fight to get me in that car so that I could go on the hunting trip. Because he knew how angry my mother was. But he was willing to sacrifice a little bit of himself to make sure that I could go on that trip, and I did. And I'm alive today to prove it. That's what elder brothers do. They go and they look for the lost and the helpless in the world, and they reach out and they save them, and they bring them back to the Father's feast. And that's what Jesus did for us. In his name.